This is HPR episode 2267 entitled, Our Digital Art. It is hosted by Sigflup, and is about 30 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Sigflup and Sis talk about digital art and what it means to them.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
You are listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Sigflup Sinislobel, also known as Assembly, also known as Thea De Silva. In this edition of HPR, I'm going to talk about art, specifically my art and my friend Cicero Alice Barrox's art, both of which is digital. We both do digital art. And so as digital artists, our canvas is the pixel and the light. Our art doesn't really exist on a canvas. It exists sort of this ethereal memory that happens to be in computers. And so that's important. We're living in the future, right? And so reality is dominated mostly by the camera and in film and stuff like that. This is what is real, quote unquote. And so art has sort of, it needs to grow up. That's really bad. This is a really bad thing to say. I love art. I love a lot of artists, traditional or not. But we need to welcome digital art, which I don't think a lot of people are doing, because we're living in the future, right? And things are digital. And it by no means diminishes art if you do it on the computer. And so I do art on the computer. I don't have a tablet or anything like that. I'll tell you about my technique really quick. I don't really have a tablet. I draw with the mouse. And so I draw like an outline of the mouse, and then I add another layer and I draw over the outline to where the shadows are going to be. And then I draw the shadows, and then I kind of smudge things into place. I really like the smudge tool. And then I like frame different areas, and I spray paint, and I smudge some more, and then I draw a little bit more. And so that's my technique. It involves a lot of smudging and spray painting and having layers. And The cool thing about computers is you have ownership of it. Like those who control the cameras, those who control the editing, when it comes to camera-based reality, controls you. And so you, drawing art with the same stuff that controls the camera and whatnot, is very empowering. I think it's kind of evolved from... So you have television and you have a remote control. You can change the channel with the remote control. I think that's the first layer of freedom when it comes to stuff that is primarily seen on a display or a CRT or an LCD or an OLED display or anything like that. And so that was the first thing. Then like Pong came out, and we were like, oh my god, this simulation of Pong is so accurate and enchanting that I can use it and get better at doing Pong. You're like, oh my god, there are pixels on the screen and it's moving, is more the reaction. And so you're freeing the pixels on the screen. And so to draw entirely in a digital medium means that you control a lot of what the box, this computerish thing that dominates your life, you can control it and create art with it. And I think that's very, very special. The criticism, I think the main criticism of digital art is you can take shortcuts. Like you can trace, you have layers and stuff like that. But you gotta keep in mind that okay, so watch David Hockney's Secret Knowledge, that thing, that show on YouTube. It's about an hour and 11 minutes long, and it talks about art being drawn through the lens or a mirror or a concave mirror or a convex lens, and so which has been doing, people have been doing that for a while. And so, like, to ascribe the only utility that shortens things as digital, I don't know if that makes sense, but is a bit ignorant. Like it's a bit ignorant, and it's truly transformative. I think that's the important part. If you sketch the shadows of a picture, or you sketch the highlights, or the very, very dark shadows, through the process of making it in the computer, it's often transformative, which is important, because that's defines, you know, that's where art comes from. And so, yeah, there are two, you know, there are two things about art. One is the story that the subject has, and the other is the story that the artist has. And I think this is especially relevant when it comes to portraits. I like to draw portraits of people, and be them real or not. And so yeah, I try and convey my story with them. I don't necessarily convey their story, which is it's a bit strange. But yeah, so both Sis and I have schizophrenia, and I've been trying to express that in art. I can say that for myself. I'm not exactly sure about her, but like the horror of not knowing what's real, be it delusional or hallucination, is something that I want to capture, and I've been trying to capture it for a while. I haven't really been able to do it. I have groups of three. There are three entities in my life. There's 20, 22, and 10. And then there are two voices that I hear, and that is 58 and 74. And so, like, I have three skulls or a face with two faces peeking out of bloody holes and stuff like that. And so, yeah, that's what I explore. I use the GIMP. The GIMP is my friend. I also use Blender and Inkscape. I make logos as well. And yeah, so let's talk to Cicero. All right, we're here with Alice Ferox, who is a digital artist. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate having the opportunity.
Yeah, no problem. What kind of work do you do?
Well, I would say it's mostly photography based, and those pretty much take form of prints and digital images. So. And a lot of that is just taking pictures of myself. And those photos end up reflecting either my schizophrenic self or the emotional day-to-day, things like that. And I always just had an interest in portraiture, so I guess that's the kind of where it comes from.
Okay. Do you have any artists that you've drawn inspiration from, or
Yeah, my inspiration comes from, like, kind of occulty, witch housey type stuff. And sometimes that may be things that I either see or hear. But I guess I would describe myself as a magical type photographer that puts a little bit of macabre in the mix to make images that I do.
How long have you been dealing with photography?
Well, it depends who you ask, but I guess my interest in photography sort of started in high school. But I had a bad relationship with photography because I ended up having a professor in high school who ended up being a bit of a purist when it came to photography. And I'm the type of person that likes to mess up my photographs. So
yeah.
I had a bit of an aversion to photography at first, but it definitely grew on me. So I've been doing that probably since around 2008.
I see. So you use, at the moment you use digital cameras, I take it?
Yep, I was trained at MCAD in Minneapolis, and with film and processing silver gelatin prints and color film as well, but I've always had a love for digital photography, and I still focus in that regard, so I appreciate being film, but my home is in the digital.
Yeah, mine too. How do you feel about the recognition that digital artists get in mainstream art? Do you think it's kind of frowned upon, or how do you feel about that?
Well, there's different barriers that digital artists have, whether it be a digital photographer or illustrator, or just about anything digital, and there's a bit of resentment from traditional artists, I suppose.
Yeah.
Whether that be from the way our processes work, and the way I understand digital art is that, yeah, there is a bit of a shortcut, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't mean that the quality of the work is suffering. It's just a different medium.
Yeah.
And so I just really appreciate all digital art, because it's something that I grew up with. You know, I've always had a digital camera, and although I appreciate the elements of film, you know, it's just the convenience of it is wonderful, and the ability to make mistakes and not let that bog you down is great as well.
Yeah.
So I have a great appreciation for digital art, and it'd be wonderful if traditional artists would cut some digital artists some slack in that regard.
Yeah. Well, have you heard of David Hockney, out of curiosity?
No, tell me about David Hockney.
He's still alive. I believe he's still alive. Jesus Christ, let's hope so. But he's an artist, kind of a traditional artist who's gotten into drawing stuff on iPads.
And all right.
So he has shows of stuff that's drawn on an iPad and stuff like that. And he goes through the normal channels about getting things on shows and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like galleries, rather. And
right.
Yeah, so he's right interesting. He's one interesting character.
Well, I did a quick Google on images on him, and I can see where you're saying with drawing on the iPad, which is wonderful, because digital art, you know, the platform itself is so much more accessible.
Yeah, anyone who has a laptop can.
Yeah, anyone has a laptop, and there's so many free programs for either drawing or photography. It's very accessible, you know, medium.
So this begs the question, what software do you use usually?
Well, right now I'm still using Photoshop and Lightroom, but my beginnings were actually with PaintShop Pro, and it was basically a cheaper version of Photoshop.
Yeah.
And while I still do my pirating now, it was a great introduction to what is possible in photo manipulation.
Yeah.
And so I've grown up since then from PaintShop Pro, but my home is in Photoshop and Adobe products right now. But I have used GIMP on occasion, and a wonderful free program that is.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with GIMP. What do you do in GIMP every once in a while? Like, what does it offer that Photoshop does not?
Well, I don't know if it know what it offers in Photoshop that I don't use, because there's so many tools in all these programs.
Yeah.
And I use a fraction of them. I'm more of a person who layers up images, so
yes.
I appreciate the layering system in these programs.
Yeah.
And the different filters they provide, and you know, like. Whether it be the white balance or, you know, different curves or things like that to manipulate the images in whatever way I see fit. So I always appreciated the geniusness that layers ended up being for
yes.
digital artists and photographers. It's just, I don't know what I would do without it.
Yeah.
It's so fundamental to my making.
I'm sorry, what was the very last thing you said? You said, still the menting to my Meekin?
Oh, I was saying it's very fundamental to my making, so my making process.
Oh, okay, cool.
If I didn't have the layers, you know, I don't know what I would be doing. it's just so core.
Yeah. So that's the key feature of these programs is the layers.
Yep, that's one of the things I appreciate most about those things. I don't know if I'd be able to use them if I, in the way that I want to without that.
Yeah. Well, as a kid, I used to make MS Paint art, if you are familiar with that program.
Yeah, I am very familiar with that. MS Paint and Kid Pics, those are great.
Yeah, yeah, tell me about it. So one kind of annoyance for me is coming up with artist statements. I'm wondering if you feel the same way, maybe?
I do feel the same way, and I do have my artist statement. That was one of the things I had to do in my undergrad, is come up with your artist statement.
Yeah.
And I don't think, because my artist statement was so incoherent, even to me, that it was useless, and they kept asking me to make this artist statement and figure out what the art is about and what I want to do with my art and what kind of position I'm coming from, and it was until after I graduated where I realized that I wanted to make artwork that was about my experience, who I am, and in all the, you know, gender twisted darkish ways that I express myself and thought about myself. So I don't know. I mean, there's a comfort that comes with knowing what you want to write in your artist statement and finally coming to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an ever evolving paragraph, you know. It never stays the same, and it needs to evolve with you. So I don't know. I don't place a huge amount of importance on it, and I don't like to stress about my artist statement too much, but I also recognize the need for one when it comes to presenting it, your artwork, to perhaps galleries.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily something I do anymore, and I'm more of a print-on-demand type artist.
Yeah.
So the artist statement has kind of gone to the wayside.
Have you ever considered making a book of your art?
I have thought of it, and I have done it, actually.
Oh, really?
And,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I have a few books on Amazon. They're
what?
Yep, they're photographic books. Very little text to accompany them, but it's been a few years since I've made a book.
How can we find this on Amazon? Like, what should we search for?
Well, you could probably search for Cicerel Alice Ferox, that's my full name, on Amazon, and it should come up. It's S-I-S-S-O-R-E-L-L-E, Alice Ferox, S-E-R-E.
Yeah,
E-R-O-S.
Fleeting Brainwaves and Mind Cocktails.
Yep, so that's one of them.
That was probably, I can't even remember listening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 2014. July 25th, 2014.
Yep.
Oh, it's really hard to hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying, I did a monthly magazine in 2012 and 2013 for a while, but the project has been shelved permanently.
All right. So how did you publish your book on Amazon, your books? How did you publish Fleeing Brainwaves and Mind Cocktails?
That is through another website called CreateSpace, and I believe they are a sibling company of Amazon, and they allow you to publish things for free, and it's been wonderful. It's a great way to publish your stuff with no risk to you, and they'll send you a copy to proof it, and so you can see what that looks like in real life. And so I've just been doing that.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I published mine through lulu.com.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I do not have an ISBN it yet. I can order one from them for like $20 or something like that.
That's outrageous.
Yes. Well, I guess the ISBNs come from this company called Boker. So it'd be cheaper, less constricting. I think that, I don't know how they constrict their how that works with Lulu, but if you get it through Boker, I understand that you can go to any publisher with the same ISBN.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
But no.
CreateSpace.
Yeah. I know they will give you an ISV 10 and 13 included.
Ah, so. Okay. Right on.
Right.
So who's been the subject of your photography aside from yourself? Like
I have very limited subject matter in regards to people. So
yeah,
that includes Diana, my partner, and that's just about it. You know, I'm a bit of a recluse and an introvert, and that means I interact with very little and I'm a bit anxious when it comes to photographing other people.
I'm
very comfortable with myself, but not so much other people, which is the worst thing to say as someone who calls himself a portrait photographer.
Yeah, the truth comes out.
Yeah, the truth is out all there, laid to bear.
Yeah, do you feel that it's their scrutiny of the photographs? Do you think that has a part to do with it?
Well, I scrutinize myself. I'm very critical of myself being able to photograph such a limited audience.
Yeah.
And I would love to expand that, but I'm still working out how to position my subjects and direct them in a way that I want them to be directed. And it's not that I haven't photographed other people. My career was originally built photographing many, many families and people. It's just that I'm not sure I want to capture who they are. I think I want to make stories about them. And when you approach somebody saying, I want to make a photograph of you, but I don't want to tell your story, I want to tell my story about you.
Yeah.
But people are a bit taken aback by that. So yeah. I would love to get more people, but I'm still trying to cross that bridge.
Yeah, I don't know, I think art is a reflection of the beholder. You know what I mean? Like the beholder being you.
Right.
So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense to me too right now. So, and photographing myself, I'm always a willing participant, you know. So that is an immediate barrier that's broken, you know, and it's much more accessible for me.
Yes. So, where do you see your art in the world?
Right. That's a an amazing question. I frequently ask myself that. But I think they lie on the internet, to be frankly honest, is that they lie in a digital space. I don't really make a lot of prints anymore. And I find gallery exhibitions to be a bit dishonest when it comes to, you know, displaying my work. I like the idea of it living in an intangible realm.
Okay, stepping back a little bit, what do you think of that? Like you said that galleries don't really there's some agenda behind them, or I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, much that they have an agenda, it's just that...
Mind you, I've never been in a gallery, so this is me, not knowing.
No, that's okay. Galleries are great for a whole host of artists, and I was... You know, I did my undergrad with the full knowledge that I was going to display my work in a gallery. And I've done that, and I did that for many years, but... It's just, I don't know. There's something about it. You have a more limited audience, it seems, and the internet is accessible. And the gallery for me is extremely highbrow. And I make artwork that you don't have to think about, that you don't have to write a paragraph for, that you just find interesting or beautiful on its own. And I feel like the gallery setting hinders some of those things, and I just like the idea of having an online gallery, you know,
yeah,
always available for the public to see, and it's living, you know, in every person's home or mobile device. I really enjoy that concept,
yeah,
more than the gallery.
So you're a pretty hardcore digital artist.
Yeah, I would say so. I've really embraced digital art, you know, and living on the internet and creating our own spaces, you know, and it's so much easier, it's so much more accessible, and you can make that space any way you want.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
Any kid with a laptop can do a lot.
And you can make a free website, you know, anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's your own gallery. That's not something people can do in real life, you know. Ask somebody to whip up a gallery in real life real quick. Huh? It's a lot harder.
Do you this is another question kind of in the regards to artist statements. For myself, I find hold on. I find that the name of pieces is kind of, I like, you know what I mean? Like, do you have a problem naming pieces?
Yeah. Oh, I can see what you're saying. And I don't think that's exclusive to you. Many artists have trouble, you know, naming their pieces. That's why you see so many untitled number 7 or an untitled number 56.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I've always shared that struggle other artists have naming their pieces.
Yeah.
Namely because a lot of my titles for my pieces come from music.
Oh, okay.
And increasingly most of those pieces are either one or two words.
Uh-huh.
And it's usually a section of a song or a section of a lyric that ends up being the name of my piece.
Huh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that comes about, because I wouldn't describe my artwork all that musical.
Well, thank you. It's been a lovely time talking with you.
Well, thank you for reaching out to me. It was a pleasure, and thank you for your questions.
Yeah, no problem.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hekka Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.